and snapped into my hustler's mentality. Think wise, I told myself. Don't get aggravated. Just be cool and get what you can out of these dudes. They look like some cool black cops. They're probably rap fans. Start manipulating. There was a brief moment of silence as I gathered my thoughts. Whose idea was it to arrest me after the show? I asked. 'Cause I saw you guys before we went in. Another moment of silence. It was my idea, the cop driving responded. I didn't want the fans to start rioting if you didn't perform. Now just reel them in. That was cool, man. Good looking, man, I said. At least I got to enjoy our party. The driver replied, no problem. How was the show? And who was fighting? It was good. I don't know who was fighting, I said. It happened behind us on stage while we were performing. The driver relaxed and started talking more now. Well, you're used to seeing us around. We've been assigned to Mobb Deep and G-Unit, he said. Wow. So this is the hip-hop task force that I heard so much about. Yeah, I thought I recognized you guys. I've seen y'all around a few times, I said. But I was lying. I'd never seen these fools before. Yeah, we were at that Lloyd Banks party a while ago, the driver said. There were a lot of hot women at that one. We've been following you for a couple of months. Another unmarked car followed them. The other car, with three white undercovers, pulled up alongside us. I looked down at my chest and remembered that I had on about 250,000 worth of chains, bracelets, and rings. I wasn't about to let it all go into some grimy-ass police property room. So I asked the driver, hey man, listen, do you mind if I use your cell phone so I can call my manager and have him meet us somewhere on the way to the precinct? I don't want to go through the system with all this jewelry on. They looked at all the diamonds I had on. Go ahead, let him do it. Pass me your cell phone, the one sitting next to me told the driver. I gave him Gotti's number. Hello? Is this Gotti? This is Detective... can't remember. We're taking your man Prodigy to the Midtown Precinct, and he wants to give you his jewelry. Meet us on the corner of 35th Street and 9th Avenue, okay? Cool, thanks. While we were running red lights through traffic, we got pulled over by a blue and white squad car. These idiots are pulling us over, the driver said. You see, Prodigy? They're just doing this because we're black. Don't they see our police lights flashing in their face? I couldn't believe it. Cops were getting pulled over by some other cops for driving recklessly. This was some classic shit. Driver, turn the car off. One of the white cops got out the unmarked car and pulled his badge chain out of his shirt to let the cops in the squad car know that they were all cops. When the squad car police realized they pulled over some black detectives, they apologized and went on their way. I was still wondering why in the hell I was being arrested. I kept asking, but they wouldn't say. It almost seemed like they didn't know. All they said was, we've got a warrant for your arrest. You'll find out when you get booked and processed. Gotti was waiting on the corner of 35th Street and 9th Avenue. The D's took all my jewelry off of me, opened the car trunk, spread my jewelry out on a towel, and took pictures of it. Then told Gotti they needed to take his picture. I guess they wanted these pictures for their Mobb Deep G-Unit hip-hop task force file. They wanted to know about everyone around us. But the pictures of my jewelry seemed strange. What could they use that for? We're doing this so that we're not responsible for anything if something turns up missing when you get out, one of them said. I told Gotti to contact Kiki and have her call my lawyer. Then they took me to the precinct. Fingerprints, mugshots, and waiting for hours in a cell before they transported me to central booking, The tombs. The only thing good about the tombs, after sitting in the precinct for hours, was that they brought you bologna and cheese sandwiches and milk to the bullpen holding cells. On my way through the metal detectors in the hallway, I saw Mike Lighty, Chris Lighty's little brother, waiting on line to be searched for another bullpen. We said what's up to each other and kept it moving. Mike said that he had been arrested for fighting somebody, and I told him I didn't know what I was in for yet. The three wooden benches in the bullpen were full of sleeping inmates, so I put my jacket on the floor to lie down. The floor was dirty as hell, but when you're tired and locked up, you start not caring about dirt. I fell asleep on the hard, grimy-ass floor, and as soon as somebody got up off the bench, I took his spot. The whole place smelled like piss. The toilet didn't even have a seat, just a rim covered with dry piss and spit. A few hours later, the pen was full to capacity, with hardly any standing room. You start to lose time in there. The waiting process, usually about 24 hours, seems like forever if you didn't sleep. So mostly, I slept. Around 10 a.m. the next morning, a black detective shouted my name, cuffed me, and led me to the courtroom to see the judge with my file in his hand. "Officer, can you please tell me what I'm being charged for?" I asked. "They didn't tell you yet?" he said. "No. I've been trying to find out all night," I said. He looked at my papers as we were walking. "Did you ever get a ticket for talking on a cell phone while driving?" "You gotta be shitting me," I said. "That's what this is all about?" "Yep," he said. One afternoon, I was driving my Porsche through the city, talking on the phone. The seatbelt cops hid behind trucks and vans next to traffic lights, looking for drivers and passengers without seatbelts on. They caught me on the phone. I had forgotten to pay the ticket, and they issued a bench warrant. "But they never come looking for you. They usually just wait until you get stopped again, and when they ran your name through the system, they see that you had a warrant." The hip-hop task force must have been investigating my criminal history and used the warrant as an excuse to come get me. The task force is known for racial profiling. Even though the D's who arrested me were black, they were only following orders from their white superiors. They actually came looking for me like I was America's Most Wanted for talking on a cell phone while driving. Do they have a country music task force? And why not? Those redneck shit kickers are probably some of the biggest gun runners, gun holders, and coke dealers around. You think not? Why? Because they're white? The world is so racist, it's a shame. The judge released me with time served. No fine, no bail, case closed. I walked more than 35 blocks from the tombs, down by Wall Street, to Alchemist's crib, and took a 2-hour nap on his couch. I woke up, washed up, and bounced because we were leaving for the U.S. tour that night. The Blood Money tour was an amazing time. Ever since seeing Naughty by Nature's stage set at an Apollo concert in the early 90s, I wanted to do something similar, but better. What if we had a stage set built like the Projects, I imagine? Back when we were planning the America's Nightmare tour, I met with a guy named Snow, who built stage sets and wanted $20,000 to create my vision. Jive didn't want to give us the budget, so it didn't happen. But 50 loved the idea, and we hired two guys from the G-Unit crew to assemble and pack away the set, which took about an hour on each end. Every night, we came out the front door of the project building at the beginning of each show. One of our first stops on the tour was an appearance at a small store in Baltimore with people lined up around the block waiting for an autograph. Dudes who looked like they hadn't changed their clothes in years and kids looking like they didn't have a dollar to their name were online to buy our CD. Meanwhile, I had on tons of jewelry. For the first time in our career, I felt guilty. It was time to truly make a change in how I carried myself and spent my money. Prodigy and Mobb Deep represent the hood. We represent poverty. I felt as though I was rubbing my money and fame in their faces. Baltimore is one of the most poverty-stricken, drug and crime-infested hoods on the map, running neck and neck with D.C., Detroit, and Louisiana. Touring the world all those years had given me the opportunity to witness poverty all over the planet. England, France, Russia, India, all the way back to the U.S. Poverty creates criminal thinking and actions. I was seeing things with new eyes. Speaking with kids at a juvenile detention center in Atlanta was one of the highlights of the tour. There were 10-year-olds locked up for murder and all kinds of wild shit. It felt good to share our experiences with them. The detention center awarded Havoc and me with a plaque showing their appreciation. In Los Angeles, we had a show at the House of Blues on Sunset and stayed at the hotel directly across the street. Earlier that day, accompanied by our G-Unit radio rep Nelson and our Interscope radio rep Adam Favors, we did a radio show at Power 106 with DJ Felly Fell. Felly asked us how it felt to be on G-Unit with 50 Cent. Man, it's great, man. 50 is the best, I responded. For our signing bonus, he bought us Porsches and gave us 20% of the game's publishing. So anytime that game makes a hit record, that's a new house for us. So I wish game nothing but success. He's making us rich. I was just popping shit. It wasn't true. I was just saying shit to get game pissed off because he was dissing G-Unit on a lot of songs. You should have seen the look on Felly Fell, Nelson, and Adam's faces. Felly Fell changed the subject real quick. I hope you got an army and a navy outside waiting for us, Nelson said after the interview. Adam Favors started making all kinds of phone calls in a panic. It was funny. We didn't have to call armies and navies. Trust, we had it covered. I was relaxing and writing rhymes in my hotel room before getting ready for the concert when 40 Glock knocked on the door. Yo, the game is outside in front of the hotel with some basketball dude, he said. We got the drop on him. He doesn't even know we here in this hotel. What'd you want to do? 40 pulled out a 45 caliber pistol and continued. He saw Nice with the Mobb Deep game over shirt and got spooked, cuz. My man Maniac walked over to him and offered him a one-on-one fight. He still out there right now? I asked. Yeah, cuz. We spit lungies all over his Bentley, 40 said. Look over the balcony, cuz. Hey, give me the gun, I said. Y'all niggas put the video camera on game. I'm gonna shoot the gun off the balcony and we catch him on camera ducking and running from the shots. Cuz, you tripping. We on Sunset, 40 said. You know how fast police will be here? Look, I'm not going to shoot him. I'm going to shoot in the air so we can get him on camera scared to death, I said. The gun will be long gone before the police get here. Nah, cuz, you're going to make this shit hotter than fish grease, 40 said. Let's just go beat his ass. Okay, I'll meet you in Harry's room in 5 minutes. After I got dressed, I went to Haz's room and told him what I wanted to do. No, you bugging, P, Haz said. I'm gonna go down and talk to him. Real men talk things out. What? There's nothing to talk about, I said. Man, fuck talking. Real men talk things out, Haz repeated. I knew what Haz meant. Of course men can talk, but in this situation, I didn't agree at all. There was nothing to talk about. Game had been running his mouth about G-Unit and Mobb Deep ever since 50 dropped him and signed us, so I wanted to do something about it. Yo, guess what, cuz? 40 said about 5 minutes later. I just got off the phone with one of my blood homies, and he said Game called him saying, "Yo, Mobb Deep is on Sunset. Come over here and let's show these niggas how Cali gets down." My blood homie said he's in the car with Suge right now, and they been looking for Game for a while now. They said they gonna rob Game when they get here. This was getting good. Meanwhile, Havoc wanted to talk it out. He was being smart and trying to stay out of trouble. Havoc would get busy if his back was to the wall, but he saw that it wasn't that serious. He was right, and I was wrong, but I didn't see it at that time. I was a natural-born troublemaker. It excited me. Hey, I'm sorry if you can't relate. That's just me. That's the same reason why I'm writing this book from a solitary confinement prison cell in Mid-State Correctional Facility. Suge Knight and 40's homeboy pulled up in a red GT Bentley. Our niggas had Game surrounded, his car covered in spit. Then, somebody from the hotel front desk must have called the police. As soon as the police pulled up, Game got in his spit-riddled Bentley and bounced. Suge did the same. Damn, I wanted to see some action. The morning after the House of Blues show, we headed to San Diego. R&B singer Keisha Cole was working on her second album and looking for beats. Keisha's people sent Havoc a number to contact her. In the back of the tour bus, Hav was tipsy. I couldn't tell if it was from the night before or that morning. He called the number. "What's up? This is Havoc. I heard you working on your new album. You know I got that fire for you, but to tell you the truth, I don't want to talk about music right now. I'm trying to holler at you. So on some real shit, if you want to talk about music, then you might as well just hang up right now." No. Why did he just say that? I asked myself. I couldn't hear what Keisha said back to him, but I could tell from Havoc's response that it wasn't good. "What? You know my man P already. Oh, yeah?" Then he looked at me in shock. I was confused at first, thinking, I know her? Damn. Did I bag her back in the day? Then it hit me. Keisha, from the Beverly Center Mall. Oh, shit. I bagged Keisha Cole before she became famous. Hav immediately ruined his opportunity to produce for her. Keisha hung up on him. "You know her, son? She says she knows you," he said. Yeah, I bagged her a couple of years ago in the Beverly Center. I didn't realize it was Keisha. It was before she blew up," I said. "Damn, son, you just fucked that relationship up. You could have sold her some beats." But Hav was too bent and brushed it off. "Keisha, if you're reading this, I apologize for all that nonsense." After covering most of the U.S., we toured overseas in London and Paris as usual. Then made the trek to Australia and New Zealand for the first time, with a connecting flight in Tahiti. In a car on the way to the hotel in New Zealand, my vision suddenly went from blurry to black. By the time we got to the hotel, I was totally blind, only seeing bright lights. I had just seen the movie Ray, starring Jamie Foxx, and thought I had suddenly lost my sight like Ray Charles did as a kid. I was scared to death. The hotel called an eye doctor. "Do you have any medical problems?" the doctor asked after examining my eyes. I told him I had sickle cell anemia. Okay, I know what's wrong. You have sickle cell retinitis." He explained that the high altitude of the long airplane flights decreased the oxygen level in my blood, causing blood vessels to burst in my retinas. After using eye drops, my vision slowly started to come back 5 hours later. Man, it felt good to see my ugly ass niggas again. After New Zealand, we flew to Japan. As soon as the promoters picked us up from the airport, the first thing Alchemist and I asked was, "Where's the weed at?" The hotel was plush, but the rooms were tiny, and the beds even tinier. The toilet seats had buttons that made them heat up. Hey, I guess nobody likes a cold toilet seat. At the show, they didn't have the correct equipment for us to perform, so we only did two songs on a mic with the cord. But there were so many good-looking Japanese girls, dime after dime. The after-party at our hotel was the stuff that dreams are made of. Japanese women get right down to business and aim to please. We flew to New York and rested during a short break before heading back overseas to Chile, India, Hong Kong, and England one more time. I'd ordered a bulletproof Chevy Suburban from the same company that 50 Yayo and Banks had gotten theirs from. It was waiting for me when I pulled up to my house. The truck cost $120,000 and was worth every penny. The windows could stop an AK-47, and the rest of the truck was completely armored with about 5 inches of steel. It's bomb-proof, and the tires were run flat, which meant that if they were shot, the truck could still drive. Now that we were a part of G-Unit, I knew that the jealous and envious bullshit would surface more than ever before. Look what happened to Tupac, Biggie, Stretch, E-Moneybags, and 50. It's better to prevent a situation than to try to cure the outcome. Kiki and I moved into an exclusive waterfront townhouse in a gated community in Secaucus, New Jersey, just 5 minutes from Manhattan. Giant Stadium was directly across the water, and a lot of the Giants football players lived in the community. Corey Webster was our next door neighbor. "You crazy for moving your woman around all those NFL players," Avic told me. "I wouldn't do that shit." But it didn't matter if you moved to no man's land. If a person wanted to cheat, they're gonna find a way. I got another offer to co-star in an independent film. This one was called Blackout, starring Zoe Saldana and Jeffrey Wright. Since I was a kid watching the making of Michael Jackson's Thriller, I had always been intrigued with the craft of movie making. I also started writing this book around the time of that movie offer. Kiki was writing a book about her life story and inspired me to do the same. Sitting in our new townhouse in New Jersey, I'd stay up all night typing on my laptop. I figured it would make for one hell of a read. After our short break, I'd stay up all night typing on my laptop. Our first stop was London. At the after party, DJ Who Kid was talking to this good-looking white girl who kept checking me out. When she sat back down with her girlfriends, I walked over. We kicked it for about 20 minutes, and I got her phone number. She told me she was from Long Island, but lived in Los Angeles. Who Kid walked over after she left. "Yo, you know who that was?" he said. "No, why? Who is she?" "Lindsay Lohan," he said. "Lindsay who?" I asked. "Who's that?" "She's an actress, nigga," he said, laughing. "Did you get her number?" "Yeah, I didn't know who she was. I may have heard her name once or twice, but I really didn't know who she was." We caught a flight to Chile, our next concert stop, with 40 Glock, Sam Scarfo, two G-Unit role managers, and DJ On Point. 40 minutes into the flight, I was playing Miami Vice on my son Shaka's PlayStation Portable when the flight got bumpy. 40 Glock walked into the first class section where Havoc and I were sitting at and said, "Yo, cuz, the plane is on fire, cuz. The engine just blew up." My heart almost jumped out my chest.
"Ladies and gentlemen, please remain calm," the captain said over the loudspeaker. "We're going to have to turn back around and make an emergency landing. We lost power in one of our engines."
The engine was burning on the right side of the plane. Havoc gripped the armrest.
"We lost power in one of our engines."
The turbulence made the flight feel like a full-fledged roller coaster ride. I just kept playing Miami Vice. "I'm definitely not going to die on the airplane," I said to myself. "I got a lot more work to do out in the world, and I know that the Most High is actually carrying his plane and will set it down safely in our destination. After landing, we rush to an airport bar for some drinks to calm our nerves. The concert in Chile was canceled, and we flew out the next day to Bombay for our first performance in India. No other American rappers ever performed in India. Mobb Deep was the first. 10 hours into the 18-hour flight, my sickle cell pain started creeping up. By the time the flight landed in Bombay, I was in bad shape. India is extremely poverty-stricken, and we had on all kinds of jewelry, so people looked at us like we were insane. Cows, considered sacred in India, roam freely in the streets, and the beaches were overpopulated with fully dressed people. The Marriott Hotel was the most modern structure. Everything else looked like squalor. After checking into our rooms, 40 Glock, Sam Scarfo, and our security guard House and I went to the hotel restaurant and ordered some curry chicken. Everything had curry in it out there. I was trying not to think about the pain I was feeling. Mind over matter. Just relax, I kept telling myself, as House reminisced on club fight stories from the 90s. P, I remember when TLC had the party at Roseland Ballroom in Manhattan. I saw you and your boys walk in, and 10 minutes later, y'all got into a fight and shut the whole party down. You remember that? Oh, wow. You was there for that? I said, small world. After eating, the moment I feared finally approached. I had to go to the hospital. I was fighting tears with severe pain pounding all over my body as I was wheeled into the hospital in a wheelchair. The Indian doctors broke the bad news that pain medication, IV tubing, and saline solution bags were illegal in India. The doctors seemed very knowledgeable. The only problem was they had none of the necessary supplies to treat me. A doctor pulled my man Reed from G-Unit to the side and told him, I know you can buy all these things he needs. You have to take the train and taxi 2 hours to buy these supplies off the black market. The doctor wrote down instructions, like sending Reed on an Indiana Jones mission to find the lost Ark of the Covenant. I was wheeled on a stretcher into a back room that I thought I would die in. Slowly, I felt the sickle cells accumulating and spreading throughout my body. Then I felt something that I never felt before. The sickle cells started moving to my heart. It was time to put an emergency call to the Most High. I know you're not gonna let me die like this. You better not let me die like this. Please don't let me die like this. All the dangerous shit I've been through, don't let sickle cell take me out. I've experienced pain so incredible that it made me laugh, and laughter so joyous that it made me cry. When you experience the paramount of those feelings, you learn that they're actually one and the same. My pain became so great in that rusty old Bombay hospital that I laughed out loud, delirious. Then something strange happened. All of a sudden, it felt like all my dead friends and relatives were in the room with me. I couldn't see them, but I sensed their presence. Grandmoms, my grandfather, Pops, Scarface Twin, Killer Black, Yammy, E-Money Bags. I spoke to all of them out loud, asking for help. I wanted to live. A few minutes later, the pain in my heart was gone. I thanked them. And the Most High. Reed made it back with morphine pills in a Ziploc bag, and then the doctors hooked me up to the black market IV tubing. I missed the Bombay concert. Havoc, 40 Glock, and Sam Scarfo performed without me. We booked a flight home the next morning, and I checked into Montefiore Medical Center in the Bronx. Havoc was mad that I couldn't make it to our concert out in Hong Kong. But my body needed to heal. It seemed that all Havoc cared about was the money. because he was really upset with me for refusing to go. When I think about it now, he had the right to be upset. If I'd have been taking better care of my health, I wouldn't have missed the concert.